Eddie, the Mechanic. Chapter 5. The Winter Track Season, Part 1. One Saturday afternoon, Eddie and Kathy, along with Mark and Paula, get their usual pizza. After lunch, Paula, who drove everyone today, decides to take a different route home. Seeing that Paula is traveling away from their homes, Kathy asks, "Where are you going?" Paula replies, "I just want to see something." Kathy asks, "See what?" Paula replies, "Nothing." Kathy ingeniously asks, "So, we're going to be seeing something that is really nothing?" Paula, who does not want to answer Kathy's questions, replies, "Exactly." Kathy hypothetically surmises, "Then, if we're seeing nothing, I wonder how we'll know when we're seeing it." Mark looks at Eddie and comments, "I hear a lot of Akinmola talk going on." Both Eddie and Mark at a loss to figure out what Paula has on her mind. Catching that Paula is driving toward the other side of town, Eddie comments, "I think I might know where we're going." Kathy asks, "Where?" Paula interrupts, telling Eddie, "Don't tell her." Eddie replies, "Well, now I'm 100% sure I know where we're going." Paula tells Eddie, "Oh no, you don't." Paula makes a right turn, also cluing Kathy into exactly where she is driving to. Kathy and Eddie start laughing, suggesting to Paula that her mystery side trip has been found out. Mark, at a loss to figure out what is going on, asks, "Will someone please tell me where we're going?" Kathy confidently replies, "We're going to 2nd Street." Paula makes another right turn, and they drive down 2nd Street. Paula exclaims, "Wow. This is the spookiest road I've ever seen." Kathy sits back, relaxes, and replies, "I told you so. The houses are haunted." Pointing to a house on the right, Mark comments, "Look at that one. The siding is falling off, and the roof is caving in." Kathy asks, "I wonder which one is Mr. Crumb's house." Eddie, pointing to the first house on the left, which has the back of the house facing the road, replies, "It's probably that one." Kathy asks, "How do you know?" Eddie replies, "By the dirt tracks going to the back of the house. They are about the right width for his Volkswagen Beetle." Looking at Mr. Crumb's house, Kathy replies, "That place is really creepy." They get to the end of the road, and Paula turns around. Eddie, pointing to the house between Mr. Crumb's house and the recycling plant's property, mentions to Mark, "Hey, there's the perfect place for our junkyard." Mark, taking a closer look, mentions, "It looks like it's abandoned." Paula announces, exclaiming, "You guys are not buying anything on this street. It's haunted." Kathy comments, "I don't know. It's nothing that a bulldozer can't fix." Paula replies, "Yeah. The whole street needs a bulldozer and an exorcist to go along with it. I'm getting out of here." On the way out, Kathy asks Paula, "Do you see that ugly house on the left?" Paula replies, "Yeah. That's the ugliest house in the world." Kathy tells Paula, "That's where the boogeyman lives." Paula quickly replies, "Is not. There's no such thing." Kathy smiles and explains, "Sure there is. Every kid in the world has seen the boogeyman. Billions of kids can't be wrong." Paula exclaims, "Stop it, girl." Kathy replies, "Okay. I'll stop." But that doesn't change the fact that the boogeyman lives there. Paula drives away, wanting never to return to 2nd Street. And Kathy is having a great time yanking Paula's chain, especially about the boogeyman. On the way back, Kathy asks Paula, "So, what do you think of 2nd Street?" Paula exclaims, "It's haunted. And it's really spooky. That place gives me the creeps." Kathy calmly tells Paula, "I told you it was haunted. And so now you know. The boogeyman lives on 2nd Street. And now you've seen his house." Paula exclaims, "Yeah, right. And his name is Mr. Crumb." Mark comments, "I guess we're never moving to 2nd Street. Paula replies, "You got that right." Mark tells Paula, "So, I'm guessing you want me to finish up our house in the woods." Paula exclaims, "Yeah. The farther away from Second Street, the better." Paula has her curiosity satisfied. They are all convinced that they'll never get Paula on Second Street again. Practice and tryouts begin for the indoor season at the high school, and many of the team members have already been selected from the autumn practice season. Kathy, Paula, and Barbara are all present on the first day of tryouts. The drill is the same as in previous years. The candidates all head down to the indoor arena, where the weeding out process will begin. This year, at the high school, a new core team forms. Eddie's brother, John, and Jimmy Hoffa are the team's two-star sprinters. They are joined by Paul Davida, a transfer student. Tessa and Erika are the 440-yard dash stars, also running competitive times in any sprint. Akinmola and Amber are the two distance stars, with Tom Davidson, a sophomore, joining the group of core distance runners this year. John Elliott and George Livingston have demonstrated superior ability in the 880-yard run and in the mile. Elliott is also a reasonably good sprinter. And Lucius Hill, a sophomore who seems to be filling Braden's shoes, can run the 440-yard dash quite well, often performing in the lower 50-second range. By the time Hill is a senior, he might be brushing up against Braden's state record in the 440-yard dash. As Kathy and Paula are arranging the time trials for the sprinters, Kathy mentions to Paula, "You know, Mitchell is going to come to practice when we start up at the university next week." Paula asks, "Really? Are you serious, girl?" Kathy replies, "Yeah. Mitchell came by to visit me and Eddie Wright before Christmas. He said he's tired of living out of suitcases and traveling. Oh, and he said that he misses Amber." Paula replies, "Yeah, Amber. That's probably the real reason he's coming back." Kathy tells Paula, "I can't wait to see Dr. Braun's and Dr. Paxton's reaction when they see Mitchell break a 4-minute mile." Paula exclaims, "He can break 4 minutes. Are you serious?" Kathy grins and replies, "Uh-huh." After the 40-yard dash heats are completed, Kathy and Paula move on to the 440-yard dash. While the runners are getting lined up with their group, Paula tells Kathy, "You're up to something. Out with it, girl." Kathy asks, "How is that?" Paula tells her, "I know you, girl. Right now you're wondering where Braden is." Kathy quickly replies, "I'm not." Paula replies, "Well, that about says it." "Yeah, you are." Kathy tells Paula, "Okay, you're right. But, you have to admit, it's just not the same without the whole group around." Paula replies, "Yeah, you're right about that." Mr. Fraser comes by a little later, asking Kathy and Paula, "So, how are we doing?" Kathy replies, "John, Hoffa, and Davida are your top sprinters in that order. Erika and Tessa are right up there with them, off a 10th or 2. So, you have 5 good sprinters this year. The bad news is they are not quite up to last year's gold medal standard at state yet." Mr. Fraser asks, "How about in the 440? Looking at her clipboard, Kathy replies, "John is the fastest at 54.4. Hoffa, Davida, Tessa, and Erika are all about a second or two off." Mr. Fraser replies, "Not bad." Kathy, with an off-the-wall question, asks Mr. Fraser, "Hey, when someone joins the military, how long is it usually for?" Mr. Fraser replies, "It's usually a 2-year minimum contract," wondering why Kathy even asked that question. Mr. Fraser walks over to start another heat, sadly missing Eddie, Mark, Braden, and Johnson himself. When Mr. Fraser walks away, Kathy comments, "Darn." Paula asks, "What?" Kathy replies, "2 years. That means Braden isn't coming back anytime soon." Paula tells Kathy, "You're really trying to get everyone back together again, aren't you?" Kathy explains to Paula, well, just listen. What do you hear? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. You can't tell me that you don't miss Braden telling everyone how he's going to kick ass. And just wait until the meets start. It's going to take you less than 5 seconds to miss Mark messing with everyone. And look over there at the shot put. Have you ever seen it so mistreated in your life? Paula replies, yeah. I hate to admit it, girl, but you're right. Kathy tells Paula, it would really be nice if they could all run for the university. After practice, Paula quickly realizes that Kathy is right. Something is not quite the same. Everyone quietly walks up the stairs to the locker room. Braden's not around to fire up and encourage the team. No one is going out to get pizza after practice. There is no Amazon controversy. They'll all be back tomorrow, and practice will be exactly the same as it was today. On the way out of the high school, Paula mentions to Kathy, you know, I was half hoping that Mr. Crum would walk down the stairs and cause a scene. It's just way too quiet. Kathy replies, don't worry. He'll be back. After that collision on the track last semester, he has a score to settle. Paula comments, I can't wait. Kathy and Paula both get in their distinctive vehicles and head home. And sure enough, Mr. Crum is back, but Kathy and Paula are not present to witness today's confrontation. On Friday, before the first meet, the announcement is made over the loudspeaker, will Erica Gabriel please report to the administration office? Erica heads to the administration office, this time knowing exactly why she is being called there. In the gym, Mr. Zunday tells Mr. Fraser, I bet this is fallout from that fight last semester. I'm going to go and see what this is all about. Mr. Fraser tells Mr. Zunday, I think I'll come with you. It looks as if, in the gym, Mr. Chubin will be refereeing two basketball games alone. Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday walk over to and wait in the administration area for Erica to arrive. Mr. Zunday asks Mrs. Marlowe, the secretary, do we know what this is all about? Mr. Zunday already suspects that he knows why Erica is being called to Mr. Crum's office. Mrs. Marlowe tells Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser, I'm not really sure. Mr. Crum just told me to call Erica to his office. Mr. Zunday suggests to Mr. Fraser, Mr. Crum must be right on top of it this semester. He's starting early tracking down overdue library books. Mr. Fraser replies, that must be it, unless Erica has been late to class. Mrs. Marlowe, who now understands the dynamics between the coaches and Mr. Crum, suggests, who knows? Erica could have used the restroom without permission. Mr. Zunday smiles and replies, I'm sure that's it. Erica walks into the administration area, seeing Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser waiting. Mr. Zunday asks Erica, it's a little early in the semester to have an overdue library book. Were you late to class today? Erica replies, no. Mr. Zunday comments, I can't imagine, then, what this is all about. Erica adds, it's probably about the fight last December, but Mr. Zunday already knew that. Mr. Zunday assures Erica, if it is about the fight, there's nothing Mr. Crum can do about it anyway. Mr. Zunday whispers to Erica, go ahead and see how badly you can annoy him and push him over the edge. Erica smiles, knowing she is off the hook. Mr. Crum walks out of his office, telling Mr. Zunday, this has nothing to do with athletics. I'll take care of this. Mr. Zunday informs Mr. Crum, unless Erica was using the restroom without permission, I'm exercising my right to sit in on this meeting today. We've been over this before, Mr. Crum. I'm sure you remember that the school board gives me the right to be present when your disciplinary action involves an athlete. Or perhaps you lost your memory when you lost the argument with the concrete last month. Mr. Crum replies, all right, all right. But this is my meeting. I don't want any interference. Mr. Zunday replies, I'm sure the track athletes don't want any interference when they are running on the track either. So, go ahead and get on with it. You're holding up your meeting. Erica, Mr. Zunday, and Mr. Fraser enter Mr. Crum's office. Before the meeting begins, Mr. Zunday asks Mr. Crum, "It's been what? 3 years, I think, and your desk hasn't been replaced yet." Mr. Crum fails to acknowledge Mr. Zunday's comment, but is clearly distressed by the inference. Since Mr. Fraser no longer reports to Mr. Crum, he adds, "It doesn't look like his bookcase has been replaced either." With Mr. Crum now unnerved, he is ready to begin his meeting. And Erica is feeling a bit more relaxed after Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser verbally worked Mr. Crum over a little. Mr. Crum opens the meeting by stating, "Erica, I suppose you're wondering why I have called you to my office." Erica replies, "Let me think. If I had to guess, I'd say that it has something to do about my invitation to join the National Honor Society." Mr. Crum exclaims, "Don't get smart with me." Erica replies, then, "No. I have absolutely no idea why you called me to your office. None at all. And, just to let you know, I have no overdue library books." Mr. Zunday whispers to Mr. Fraser, "Crum is apparently very mad about something. I guess he didn't like his Christmas present this year." Mr. Fraser whispers back, "I think you're right. He's not even wearing it." Mr. Crum announces to Erica, "Well, then, let me explain it to you, young lady. Last December, you were involved in an altercation when school was in session." Erica interrupts, telling Mr. Crum, "It was before school started." Mr. Crum exclaims, "That doesn't matter. And, please don't interrupt me again, am I clear?" Erica replies, "No." Mr. Crum pauses and sarcastically asks, "What part of what I said are you not clear about?" Erica replies, "It was before school started, but, if you want to make shit up, go right ahead." Waiting. Mr. Fraser whispers to Mr. Zunday, "She is beginning to sound like Kathy." Mr. Zunday reminds Mr. Fraser, "Well, they all hang out together. After all, iron sharpens iron." Mr. Crum instructs Erica, "Okay. I've had enough of your attitude already. Tell me what happened during the last day of school back in December." Erica tells Mr. Crum, "Wow. That was a long time ago. Let me think. I woke up. I got dressed. I did my crunches. Then, I had breakfast." Mr. Crum interrupts, telling Erica, "Young lady, I'm talking about the fight that you were involved in." Erica replies, "Oh, that. The police are taking care of it. You don't have to worry about that." Mr. Crum replies, "Nevertheless, I want to hear your side of the story." Mr. Zunday whispers to Mr. Fraser, "I think she's going for the record in avoiding answering Crum's questions." If Erica is avoiding answering Mr. Crum's questions, she likely learned it from Mr. Zunday, who makes a sport of diverting Mr. Crum off course. Erica continues being evasive, telling Mr. Crum, "I gave my statement to the officer in charge. The case is under investigation, so that's all I'm saying." Mr. Crum is now hot under the collar, getting absolutely no cooperation from Erica. Mr. Crum tells Erica, "I'm going to give you one last chance to answer my questions." After an uncomfortable pause, Erica asks, "Which question?" Mr. Crum replies, "Tell me what happened during the last day of school last semester." Erica replies, "That's not a question. It's a request for a statement, which I already gave to the police." Mr. Fraser whispers to Mr. Zunday, "Yeah, Kathy trained her well." Mr. Zunday whispers back, "And her father too." Mr. Crum, having enough of Erica, announces the expected words, "Erica, you have been very uncooperative with me. I really wish you had been more respectful while I am conducting my investigation. So, since I can't get a statement out of you, I'll have to make my decision with the facts that I do have. And, with the facts that I have right in front of me, I have no choice but to suspend you." Erika replies, "Fine, then. I'll have you arrested. It sounds like a fair trade to me." Uncomfortable silence again comes over the room, which Mr. Zunday allows to continue. It's Mr. Crumb's move, and Mr. Zunday is perfectly happy to wait for his response. Erika breaks the silence, stating, "I guess it's quiet time. The last time we had quiet time was in kindergarten." Mr. Crumb, sincerely believing that Erika is bluffing, informs Erika, "You're not having me arrested, and you know that." Opening her notebook to the last page, Erika reviews the notes given to her by her father, the police captain. Referring to her notes, Erika tells Mr. Crumb, "I am running for a track scholarship this year. You are getting in the way. If you suspend me, I will get you out of my way once and for all." Now reading from her notes, Erika informs Mr. Crumb, "And then, my father will file a civil case against you for tortious interference with a student's future educational prospects. If you don't know what that means, my father suggested that you contact an attorney." Erika announces, "So, I'm going to give you 10 seconds to change your mind. Otherwise, I'm having you arrested. 10, 9, 8, 7. Mr. Zunday has had enough. Making a T symbol with his hands, Mr. Zunday tells Erika, "Time out," and Erika momentarily stops counting. Addressing Mr. Crumb, Mr. Zunday announces, "Mr. Crumb, you are not suspending Erika. Again, this is a case of self-defense prompted by a physical attack. And if you haven't read your policy manual recently, Section 5, which refers to physical altercations, specifically does not address physical altercations when a person involved is not a student. I'm sure that's because it is well outside your jurisdiction. If you really want to suspend Erika, feel free. I'm sure Mr. Shapiro would welcome the opportunity to hand Erika her diploma this spring." Mr. Crumb sits back, contemplating what Mr. Zunday just told him. Hearing that Mr. Shapiro could possibly be handing Erika her diploma in the spring struck fear into Mr. Crumb. Knowing that he has again lost the battle, Mr. Crumb announces, "Okay. For now, I am not going to take any action against Erika. However, I am very concerned that this is the second time during this school year that Erika has physically struck me." Mr. Zunday interrupts, telling Mr. Crumb, "The first time, you were warned to stay off the track. That would make it your problem, not hers. And what happened last month was your own fault." Mr. Crumb, not wanting to hear Mr. Zunday's lecture, announces, "Okay, okay. We're done here for now." Erika, Mr. Zunday, and Mr. Fraser leave Mr. Crumb's office as fast as they can and meet in the school lobby. Mr. Fraser tells Mr. Zunday and Erika, "Again, he basically just said nothing and wasted everyone's time. It's the same old psychobabble. You'd think it would end at some point." Erika asks, "What's his problem, anyway?" Mr. Zunday replies, "I wish I knew. Ever since the track team started dominating the sport in the region, he's been after the top performers. Since he's now apparently after you, consider it an honor." Mr. Fraser adds, "You do have a point. He always seems to be after the top performers. I'm sure that John Davies will attest to that." Mr. Zunday assures Erika, "Don't worry about Mr. Crumb. There's nothing he can do about this anyway." Erika, happy to hear that Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser have her back, heads back to class. Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser head to the gym, wondering what Mr. Crumb will dig up next. Track practice at the university starts as soon as the semester begins. Eddie and Mark, although their administrative paperwork has not been completed, are invited to attend track practice for 3 days. The first practice is held on a Wednesday at 7 a.m. Eddie drives up in his MGB right behind Kathy, and they head inside. Mark arrives in his Jeep and, seeing that Eddie has already arrived, heads to the locker room. Bobby B. arrives on his BSA Starfire motorcycle and is well dressed for the cold weather. Mitchell, who borrowed his parents' automobile today, is the last one to arrive. They meet up with Johnson, who is already inside and ready to go. While in the locker room, with a bit of deja vu, Eddie comments to his friends, "They are all checking us out, just like when we were freshmen in high school." Mark comments, "Yeah, I can see that." Eddie mentions, "Well, at least Paul Mahoney isn't here." Mark replies, "Yeah. But they have two McCrutchens to make up for it." Eddie replies, "And one McCrutchen is staring at us." Johnson informs Eddie and Mark, "They are probably wondering why you guys are here." Mark adds, "And worrying." The group heads to the indoor track, on which they've never run on before. Entering the arena, it has a strange resemblance to the track they ran on for 4 years at the high school. Mark comments, "Wow. It looks just like home." Mitchell asks, "I wonder how good these guys are." Eddie mentions, "I hear their miler is good. He runs a little over 4 minutes. But their sprinters aren't too fast." Bobby B. mentions, "I don't see their shot put team." Mark points to the weakest looking guy that he can find and tells Bobby B. there he is. Over there. Not missing a beat, Eddie adds, "I hear they signed a new shot put guy named Chucky." Apparently the high school track stars have not lost their sense of humor in the least after graduation. Kathy, Paula, and Barbara enter the arena and head straight for the new guys on the block. Kathy, seeing most of the tribe together again, asks, "Hey, where's Braden?" Mitchell replies, "He got back very late on Monday night." Kathy screams out, "What? Are you serious?" Mitchell, repeating himself, says, "Yeah. He got back Monday night. I talked to him yesterday." Kathy yells out, "Are you for real? You're not shitting me, are you?" Mitchell replies, "No. He's back. The Navy wouldn't take him." Kathy, wondering if she is dreaming, screams, asking Mitchell, "What?" Mitchell explains, "Braden is colorblind, so he failed the physical examination. So, he went to a police academy somewhere in the city where he was, and he graduated last week. So, he's back in town." Mark exclaims, "Wow. He must have been really disappointed." Mitchell replies, "He didn't seem that upset about it when I talked to him." Hearing the news, Kathy is suddenly in a really good mood. Off to the side, congregating with a bunch of upperclassmen, is Mark's adversary, Todd McCutchen, and his older brother, Scott, who is now a senior. With them is Steve Leggett, who has the reputation of being the fastest sprinter on the team. The conversation among that group of upperclassmen is anything but synergistic to the team. McCutchen knew that Johnson is attending the school from the autumn practice sessions. Why Mark, Eddie, Bobby B., and Mitchell are all at today's practice session is leaving them wondering. And what Kathy is so excited about is a big mystery to McCutchen. Dr. Braun, the head coach, walks in and blows his whistle. Everyone who knows the drill heads over to the bleachers and takes a seat. Those who don't know the drill follow those who do know the drill. Dr. Braun announces, "Welcome back. I hope you all had a wonderful break, but today, it's back to work. As you've probably guessed, today we are running time trials to see where everyone stands. When I am done speaking, the distance team will meet with Dr. Paxton. The sprinters will meet with Coach Herndon. The field athletes will meet with Dr. Bonamo. Mrs. Owens, the events coordinator, will be compiling your times today, so I want everyone to give it their best. Okay, let's go." Kathy points out Dr. Paxton to Mitchell, who heads over with Barbara joining the distance group. Kathy then points out Dr. Bonamo to Bobby B., who heads over to join the field athletes. The thin and wiry guy Mark pointed out earlier is among the field athletes, but he is a high jumper, and a reasonably good one at that. Eddie, Mark, and Johnson walk over together with Kathy and Paula, joining the sprinters. On the way to the blocks, Eddie tells Mark, This is our college admission test. They want to see what we can do. There's no paperwork holding anything up. Mark replies, "You do have a point." Eddie's and Mark's adrenaline levels have just shot through the roof. If they want to run track at the university, now is the time to demonstrate their competence. Coach Herndon addresses the sprinters, telling everyone, "Okay, we're running the 40-yard dash for time. Form groups of four, with someone of your own skill level." Mark mentions to Eddie, "That sounds familiar." Coach Herndon tells Eddie and Mark, "I want both of you running with Johnson." Eddie, Mark, Johnson, and Leggett are all assigned to the same group and, for some reason, are up in the first heat. Coach Herndon obviously wants to see what Eddie and Mark can deliver. After the first heat is warmed up and behind the blocks, the starter, who is a student assistant, announces, "On your marks." Eddie and Mark are ready for part one of their admissions test. The starter announces, "Set." The buzzer sounds, and the runners are out of the blocks as if their life depends on winning this race. Halfway through the race, Eddie and Mark take a clear lead. Johnson is not far behind. Leggett, wearing his heavy sneakers and ski socks, trails significantly, which would not surprise Eddie were he able to see Leggett. At the finish, Eddie crosses first, with Mark right behind. Johnson finishes in third place, with Leggett, the school star sprinter from last year, finishing in last place. Coach Herndon, getting the times from the timekeepers, announces, "Edward Boganskaya, 4.4 seconds. Mark Svoboda, 4.5 seconds. Eric Johnson, 4.6 seconds. Stephen Leggett, 5.2 seconds. Coach Herndon then announces, "That's today's standard. 4.4 seconds. The next heat, get behind the blocks." Coach Herndon, who rarely shows any emotion, walks over to Eddie, Mark, and Johnson, telling them, "That was a really, really good run. I am impressed." As the other heats are underway, Eddie glances over at the oval track, watching as Mitchell is running the mile. Eddie notices that Mitchell is conspicuously not in his preferred position of right behind the leader today. Instead, Mitchell leads the pack, followed by a long-haired hippie-type guy who is giving him a run for his money. Eddie, pointing at Mitchell, tells Mark, "Hey, take a look. Mitchell's out in front." Mark points out, "Well, at least it's a two-man race." Eddie remarks, "Yeah, but there are eight men on the track. And this is college. I thought they are supposed to be good." A few more 40-yard dash heats are run, then Kathy and Paula are up. Somehow, they manage to finagle their way into racing McCutcheon and McCutcheon. This is perhaps to provide Mark and Eddie some amusement. Or, remembering all the trouble Scott McCutcheon caused during last season, perhaps Coach Herndon wants to make a point. Mark and Eddie, sitting on the bleachers, are grinning ear to ear. Mark comments, "Watching this race is definitely worth the price of admission." The buzzer sounds and, by Kathy's primal scream, everyone knows who just left the blocks. Kathy and Paula quickly claim the lead, leaving McCutcheon and McCutcheon in the dust. Halfway through the race, it's a fight to the finish between Kathy and Paula. At the finish, it's Kathy taking first place and Paula taking second place. The elder McCutcheon marginally beats out his younger brother. Todd McCutcheon, or McCrutcheon as Mark calls him, finishes in last place, a position with which he is quite familiar. While the times are being compiled, no small disturbance arises at the other end of the arena. Eddie mentions to Mark, "It looks like Mitchell won the mile. I bet he got a good time." Mark replies, "Yeah. All that yelling and screaming is definitely about something. But Eddie and Mark will have to wait to see how Mitchell did in the mile. They know Mitchell won. Mitchell's time is what they are waiting to hear." Coach Herndon announces, "Kathy Karakova," and after a pause, "Oops, Boganskaya, 4.8 seconds. Paula Giovanni, 4.9 seconds. Scott McCutcheon, 5.5 seconds. Todd McCutcheon, 5.7 seconds. Eddie tells Mark, Kathy and Paula did good. Mark mentions to Eddie, yeah, I see that. But, you know, McCutcheon squared really sucks. Eddie comments, yeah, I can see that. It must run in the family. Word has gotten around the arena that Mitchell has just beat the school's star miler, Daryl Stone. Stone, who has not lost a race in the last two seasons that he participated in, was just handed a big surprise when he was beaten by Mitchell. Coming in 2 seconds ahead of Stone, with a time of 3 minutes, 57.5 seconds, Mitchell is ecstatic. So is Dr. Paxton, the distance coach. Hearing the news, Eddie and Mark are even more fired up to deliver a superior performance during the 440-yard dash. Neither Eddie nor Mark is willing to let Mitchell steal the whole show today. Eddie reminds Mark, well, the 440-yard dash is the second part of our admissions test. It looks like we passed the first part. And Mitchell just passed his test. Mark mentions, I wonder if they'll make him some sort of deal too. Eddie replies, I don't see how they can't. He just beat that hippie guy, who is supposed to be the fastest distance guy in the division. Mark deduces, that would make Mitchell the fastest distance guy in the division. A few more heats are run, and then it is on to the 440-yard dash. Eddie, Mark, Johnson, Leggett, and the McCutcheon and McCutcheon team will be in the first heat. Coach Herndon is not stupid. She has caught on quickly and is well aware of the rivalry between Mark and Todd McCutcheon. She knows how to stir up internal competition and get the adrenaline flowing. Better internal competition leads to better performance on the track during the season. As they walk to the starting line, Eddie and Mark both know this is part two of their admissions test. If they deliver a good time, they'll get to run for 4 more years. If they deliver a bad time, their so-called paperwork will get lost in the shuffle. Mark looks over at Todd McCutcheon and smiles. That is all it takes to throw McCutcheon off base, but Mark doesn't stop there. Mark asks McCutcheon, what's a qualifying time to make the team? Now that they are potentially teammates, McCutcheon cordially replies, they seem to prefer that everyone can break 60 seconds. Mark replies, oh good. The first time I broke 60 seconds I was in the 7th grade. Mark did it again, whittling McCutcheon down to the skill level of a 7th grader. Coach Herndon, hearing Eddie's and Mark's times from Kathy over Christmas break, assigns them to the inside lanes. Johnson, who has the best qualifying time of the remaining athletes, is in lane 3. Leggett, Scott McCutcheon, and Todd McCutcheon are in lanes 4, 5, and 6 respectively. The starter announces, on your marks. Eddie and Mark both know that this race is do or die. The starter announces, set. The buzzer sounds, and everyone in the arena is at a complete standstill, except for the 6 runners. Not surprisingly, Eddie, Mark, and Johnson lead the field. This race, however, is purely against the clock. Eddie thinks to himself that he is running this race for Kathy. Kathy really wants Eddie to be on the track team. After the first lap of the two-lap race, Eddie is in the lead, Mark is in second place, and Johnson in third place. Leggett and the McCutcheon brothers trail significantly. As the runners are on their second lap, Dr. Braun makes his way to the finish line, along with Dr. Paxton, the distance coach. Coming around the curve first is Eddie, with Mark and Johnson right behind him. Eddie crosses first, followed quickly by Mark and Johnson. Leggett finishes in a distant fourth place, followed by Scott McCutcheon. Mark's nemesis, Todd McCutcheon, finishes in last place. Eddie lies on the track to catch his breath, just like Kathy does after she runs a 440-yard dash. After the times are compiled, Coach Herndon announces, okay, everyone listen up. Coach Herndon apparently wants everyone to hear the results. Coach Herndon, deviating from the normal order in which she reports the results, announcers, Todd McCutcheon, 63.7 seconds. Scott McCutcheon, 61.9 seconds. Steve Leggett, 57.7 seconds. Eric Johnson, 47.5 seconds. Mark Svoboda, 46.1 seconds. Edward Boganskaya, 45.5 seconds. Silence falls over the arena, broken by Kathy, who cheers, "Way to go, Eddie." Coach Herndon whispers to Dr. Braun, "At least you got what you paid for." Dr. Braun replies, "I can clearly see that." Looking at his clipboard, Dr. Braun informs Coach Herndon, "And if you haven't already heard, Gary Mitchell ran a 3-minute, 57.5 second mile." Seeing Bobby B. walk up to the shot put pad, Dr. Braun tells Coach Herndon, "And here goes the other new guy. Excuse me for a second, but I really want to see this." Dr. Braun walks over to the shot put pad to see what Bobby B. can deliver. Dr. Bonomo, already knowing what Dr. Braun wants to know, reports, "This is his third throw. So far he's thrown 65 feet, 10 inches and 66 feet, 5 inches. Dr. Braun replies, "I understand from Dr. Karakova that he's an amazing guy." Seeing Dr. Braun, the boss man, watching, Bobby B., gets a bit of extra adrenaline. Intending to deliver the best performance of his life, Bobby B. takes the shot put and, with everyone watching, throws it farther than he ever has. The measurement comes in at 67 feet, 5 inches. Bobby B., at that moment, knows his day is done. He, too, has passed his admissions test with flying colors. Once everyone returns to the bench, Dr. Braun announces, "Today was what I would call an enlightening workout. Tomorrow, as you probably have already guessed, we will be running relay drills. We will be also running some relay events for time. I hope everyone has a wonderful day, and we'll see you all back tomorrow." Dr. Braun takes the time to personally invite Eddie, Mark, Bobby B., and Mitchell back for another workout tomorrow. Everyone knew they were coming back tomorrow, but, seeing their performance today, Dr. Braun wanted to make sure. The best performances of the day have been delivered by four athletes that are not even part of the team. They are in attendance today solely by invitation from the coaching staff. The university has no reason to not follow through with the offer made to Eddie and Mark. The big question of the day is what to do with Mitchell and Bobby B. Mitchell has turned in a better performance than Daryl Stone, the school's star distance runner. And Bobby B. delivered a performance in the shot put that is certain to win every meet. But the big questions of the day will be answered in the next hour behind closed doors. As the coaching staff discusses the results of the practice session, the athletes now become students and head off to class. As most of the team heads to the lockers, Kathy and Paula hang around for a few minutes talking with Eddie, Mark, Bobby B., and Mitchell. Kathy tells Eddie and Mark, "By the way, you guys will be running relay races for time tomorrow." Eddie asks, "How are we so special?" Kathy replies, "Really, now? Do you even have to ask?" Mark points out, "That means we might be back on the track with McCrutchen." Mitchell comments, "That's something I wouldn't want to miss." Everyone heads to the locker room, knowing tomorrow will be a much more interesting day. Later that day, Kathy secretly gets on the phone and calls Braden. After catching up on the last few months, Braden explains to Kathy that he failed the physical examination because he is colorblind, so he cannot join the Navy, but that he is not upset. Braden informs Kathy that he considered the Marine Corps, but the Navy does their physical exam, and he will fail that too. Braden also mentions that he asked the recruiter about whether he'd be qualified for the Air Force. Braden explains that, in order to join the Air Force, you can't be colorblind either. Braden tells Kathy that he went to the police academy instead and is now looking for a job as a police officer. Braden also mentions that he has kept in shape and can run faster now than he did at the state invitational meet. Braden, in fact, makes it a point to tell Kathy that he broke the high school national record in the 440-yard dash once during his training at the police academy. Kathy then fills Braden in on the recent events at the university. Kathy explains to Braden the deal that Eddie and Mark received, and that Bobby B. and Mitchell have both worked out with the team today. Kathy persuades Braden to make a showing tomorrow during relay drills. She explains to Braden that Eddie, Mark, and Johnson will be timed in the 4x440 relay, and that the other runners are well below par. Kathy asks Braden if he is up for an ass-kicking session. Braden, who cannot turn down the chance to kick ass on the track, agrees without any hesitation. Kathy, however, has a plan. She really wants this group back together again, and is doing her best to make it happen. So, Kathy explains her secret plan to Braden, who is fully on board. The next day arrives and, right before practice, the tribe meets in the gym. Kathy, who informed Eddie what will be happening on the track today the night before, asks Johnson and Mark, "You guys do know that you will be running a relay race for time, don't you?" Mark replies, "Yeah. I figured that. I guess they are still checking us out." Johnson mentions, "They know we've all run together before. I suspect they want to see us in action firsthand." Kathy explains to Eddie, Mark, and Johnson, "I'm guessing that they are going to put Leggett in your race. Do not cut Leggett any slack. He's slow out of the blocks, so don't slow down during the handoffs to accommodate him." Eddie comments, "That's why I call him Lug Nut. Because he's slow out of the blocks, and during the rest of the race too." Kathy reiterates, "Just don't cut him any slack at all." Kathy knows that Leggett is not even remotely up to par, and wants the coaches to see it. The coaching staff walks in, and everyone takes a seat on the bleachers. Dr. Braun blows his whistle, and announces, "Welcome back again. Today we are running relay drills and a few time trials. The field athletes will again meet with Dr. Bonomo. The rest of us will all work together today. Okay, let's get going. This is college. College athletes all know what is expected of them and know the drill well. Minimal instruction is all that is needed." The relay drills begin, with Dr. Braun and Coach Herndon evaluating the athletes' skills. Eddie, Mark, and Johnson are again put under the microscope and have their handoff skills carefully evaluated when they are handing off to each other. They have been handing off the baton to each other for 7 years, and as a result, no one is able to detect any flaws in their handoff skills. Kathy watches and is very happy to see that their handoffs are still perfect. On the track herself, Kathy is practicing with the women. Kathy notices that when Eddie, Mark, or Johnson hand off to Leggett, the handoff goes poorly. Even worse was a handoff between Mark and McCutcheon, where McCutcheon could not obtain the baton before leaving the transition zone. McCutcheon could not blame the poor transition on Mark, for McCutcheon seems to be unable to transfer the baton to anyone today. McCutcheon's gross incompetence may be simply because Mark is present. After a half hour of observing transitions, Dr. Braun blows his whistle, announcing, "Okay. Everyone on the bleachers. We're running a 4x110 relay. The following athletes, please get on the track. You will run in the order I call you. Johnson, Svoboda, Leggett, and Boganskaya." On the way to the track, Mark whispers to Eddie, "This isn't going to go too well. He stuck that clown between us." Kathy also knows this race is not going to go too smoothly, which sits perfectly well with her. Kathy secretly hopes that Leggett fails miserably. The baton is handed to Johnson, and everyone is ready to go. The buzzer sounds, and Johnson is off. Mark is on the track, waiting for the baton. Johnson hands off to Mark, which goes smooth as silk. Mark comes around the corner and sees Leggett on the track. Leggett leaves late, causing Mark to significantly slow down to transfer the baton. The bungled handoff is evident to all. Leggett takes off and, on the other side of the track, Eddie is waiting. As Leggett approaches, Eddie takes off. It is obvious to all that Eddie has to adjust his speed and technique to accommodate Leggett's lack of skill. Eddie sprints 110 yards and crosses the finish line, not exactly happy having to work with Leggett. During the race, Kathy just happened to be strategically standing next to Coach Herndon. Coach Herndon comments to Kathy, "Well, that wasn't exactly what anyone was expecting." Kathy, waiting for the opportunity all day to say it, boldly replies, "That's because Braden isn't here." Coach Herndon asks the inevitable question, "Who's Braden?" Kathy replies, "He's the state record holder in the 440-yard dash. He even broke his own record last year. He runs about a 45-second quarter mile." Coach Herndon remarks, "Oh yeah. Wait. That's right. You mentioned something about him last summer." Kathy then proudly announces, "I can have him here in 20 minutes if you want." Coach Herndon, who has been quite disgusted at some of the men's handoffs in the last half hour, replies, "With all the shit I've seen in the last half hour, go for it. What can I lose?" Coach Herndon realizes by now that Kathy delivers exactly what she promises. Coach Herndon figures that this Braden guy might be a long shot, but if anyone can run a 45-second quarter mile, they certainly deserve at least some attention. Kathy runs out into the hallway to the phone and calls Braden. Already dressed in his running clothes, Braden is home, anxiously waiting for Kathy's call. Braden picks up the phone, and Kathy tells him, "You're on." Braden replies, "I'm out the door." Hanging up the phone, Braden heads to the university. Before she re-enters the arena, Kathy throws her hand into the air and exclaims, "Yes." Kathy walks into the arena and tells Coach Herndon, "He's on his way." Coach Herndon replies, "Good. You guys are up next. Show me something good out there today." Apparently, Coach Herndon is not happy with some of the performances she's seen in the last 2 days. It could be perhaps that Eddie, Mark, and Mitchell outshine the university's team. Kathy and her mile medley relay team get on the track. Paula, the leadoff runner, has the baton. The buzzer sounds, and Paula leaves the blocks. Kathy gets on the track and knows she must deliver a good performance. Paula hands off to Kathy, which goes seamlessly. Janice gets on the track and awaits Kathy's arrival. Kathy delivers the baton perfectly to Janice, who begins her 440-yard leg. After Janice's first lap, Barbara, who is up next, gets on the track. Janice hands off to Barbara, which also goes well. Barbara, running the 880-yard leg, delivers a performance far better than expected after seeing Mitchell's one-mile run yesterday. Barbara crosses the finish line, with the mile medley relay team delivering a great performance, both in time and handoff skill. While the other heats are in progress, Kathy occasionally glances toward the door to the arena, anxiously waiting for Braden's arrival. She finally sees Braden enter the arena, exactly 18 minutes after their phone call. Walking in, all dressed and ready to run, Braden energetically exclaims, "I'm here for the ass kicking. Whose ass am I kicking today? I'm all fired up. Let's get this show on the road." Kathy smiles and runs over to greet Braden. Kathy is very glad to see Braden's highly energetic entrance. But anyone who knows Braden wouldn't expect anything less. Eddie, Mark, Johnson, and Mitchell all stand up and move quickly toward Braden, wondering what just happened. They exchange fist bumps, high fives, yo bros, and hugs. As the guys are having a brief reunion, Kathy walks over to Coach Herndon, telling her, "That's Braden." Coach Herndon replies, "Somehow, I've guessed." Kathy tells Coach Herndon, "And that's the relay team that won state last year, and have been running together for 7 years." Coach Herndon goes over to talk to Dr. Braun. Dr. Braun, who was given the heads up that Braden was on his way, blows his whistle. Dr. Braun announces, Leggett, McCutcheon, and Stone, get on the track. You are running a 4x440 relay. Warm up and take lane 2. Kathy, in the meantime, takes a seat on the bleachers, grinning ear to ear, with a few tears of happiness flowing down her cheeks. Dr. Braun asks Braden, am I right in assuming you're Braden? Braden replies in a military tone, that's correct. Sir. Axel Braden, the one and only S-Kicker-in-Chief, reporting for duty. Sir. Dr. Braun, giving the Star Relay team as much latitude as they want, tells Eddie, Mark, Braden, and Johnson, okay, you're running a 4x440. Warm up, and get out there and show me what you can do. Run in any order you want, and take lane 1. This relay team, who has been together for 7 years, can run in any order without affecting performance. They know each other well. As everyone is warming up, Coach Herndon walks over to Dr. Braun, telling him, I like this Braden guy already. And she should. Braden entered the arena with great confidence and no fear, displaying his charisma to all around. And Coach Herndon certainly recognized that Braden spoke to the coaches as if they are commanding officers in the military. Compared with what she's had to work with before, Braden seems to be a welcome relief. Dr. Braun replies to Coach Herndon, well, let's see what these guys can deliver. Taking the baton and heading to the starting line, the undefeated Northside High School 4x440 relay team is reunited, fired up, and ready to go. It is decided that Mark will lead off since Todd McCutcheon is holding the competition's baton. The starter announces, on your marks, words that Braden has not heard in 6 months. The starter announces, set. The buzzer sounds, and Mark is out to kick McCutcheon's ass. Eddie quickly realizes that Mark is not playing games. Mark clearly has something to prove. Halfway through Mark's leg, Coach Herndon tells Dr. Braun, he just ran a 22 split. Dr. Braun replies, good. It seems that I'm really getting my money's worth with these guys. It's about time we got what we paid for. Mark hands off to Johnson, who is long gone before Stone receives his baton from McCutcheon. The timekeeper, who had the watch on Mark, tells Dr. Braun and Coach Herndon, he just ran a 46.3 quarter mile. Coach Herndon asks the other timekeeper, what did McCutcheon run? The timekeeper replies, he ran it in 64.8 seconds. Not exactly his best. Meanwhile, back on the track, Johnson is taking care of Stone, widening the lead. After Johnson's first lap, Eddie gets on the track. Johnson approaches the transition zone, and Eddie takes off, demonstrating yet another seamless handoff. During Eddie's first lap, Braden exclaims, we're kicking ass. This is the best ass kicking I've seen in a long time. The coaching staff is quite surprised at Braden's unusual style of enthusiasm, which is something they've not experienced before. The tribe, hearing Braden, is even more fired up. Eddie completes his first lap, and Braden yells out, go, 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 and gets on the track. By Braden's appearance on the track, it's easy to come to the conclusion that he's done this a few times before. Eddie comes around the curve, and all eyes are now on Braden. Braden takes the baton, and the S-kicking is once again in high gear. Braden takes off, delivering exactly what he promised. Although the race has already been won, Braden is out to break some sort of record. On his second lap, Braden has everyone convinced that he is not messing around. Off the track, Kathy is standing up, in front of the bleachers, jumping up and down as if she is trying to help Braden run. Approaching the finish line, Braden crosses right before Leggett receives his baton. Cheers ensue from the tribe, with everyone knowing exactly what just happened. Braden knows he just kicked ass, and kicked it hard. Now, Braden must wait around to find out just how badly he kicked ass. Everyone waits while the times are compiled by the timekeepers. Kathy, who has seen her share of races, knows the tribe's individual times, and the composite time are both awesome. Kathy sits back on the bleachers, trying to hide her tears of happiness. After walking off his run, Braden walks up to the rest of the relay team, exclaiming, "The chief ass kicker is back. Back on the track. That was the best ass kicking in a long time." Not too many people know what to make of Braden, except for, perhaps, Todd McCutcheon. McCutcheon thought he had seen the last of Braden after high school. For some reason, McCutcheon is not exactly too fond of now having to work with Braden, Mark, Johnson, or Eddie. The timekeepers hand the performance statistics to Coach Herndon. Coach Herndon blows her whistle, basically saying that she wants everyone to hear the statistics. The room falls silent as Coach Herndon announces, "The composite time of the winning team was 3 minutes and 3.6 seconds. That would be an average of 45.9 seconds per leg. The approximate individual times are Mark Svoboda, 46.3 seconds. Eric Johnson, 46.6 seconds. Edward Boganskaya, 45.4 seconds. And Axel Braden, 45.3 seconds. Great job, guys." Kathy, joined by Paula, gets off the bleachers and runs over, giving the relay team high fives. Braden exclaims, "That was a mighty good ass kicking. I haven't felt this good in a while. Who's next? I ain't done yet. I'm only getting warmed up." Barbara walks over, telling Braden, "I can't even begin to tell you how much I've missed you. I'm so glad you're back." Braden replies, "I'm glad to be back." Coach Herndon announces, "And for the second place team, the composite time is 4 minutes and 12 seconds. Daryl Stone, you ran a 52.5. Leggett? Never mind. I will spare the rest of you the embarrassment of announcing your times. A 4 minute and 12 second composite time for a 4x440 relay race is quite pathetic for this level of competition. Mitchell or Stone could have beaten the relay team running solo." Coach Herndon tells Dr. Braun, "Forget about Kathy's internship. She should be the team recruiter." Dr. Braun replies, "That's a good point. But we'll keep them as interns, and add being a talent scout to their job description. They are always where the high school action is anyway." Coach Herndon comments, "I really don't know where Kathy comes up with all these athletes." Dr. Braun now has an interesting problem. Braden is just as qualified as Eddie and Mark. Mitchell is faster than Stone. And Bobby B is a sure bet to take first place in every meet. The problem is, as of today, Bobby B, Mitchell, and Braden have not even applied to the university. As the practice continues, Dr. Braun calls Braden, Mitchell, and Bobby B aside. Dr. Braun tells them, "Kathy told me that you guys were good, but, to be quite honest, I never expected this level of performance. So, what I'd like to do, if any of you are open to it, is set up a short meeting to discuss running for the school. As you might already know, many of our athletes are offered full scholarships and receive other benefits as well. Mitchell, who has had enough of traveling for the last few months, is the first among the group to accept Dr. Braun's offer. Bobby B and Braden quickly follow suit, finally glad to see all the work they have put in for many years is appreciated. Dr. Braun, inviting them to attend practice tomorrow morning, sets a time after practice when they will discuss any potential offers." Once the meeting with Dr. Braun is over, Braden, Mitchell, and Bobby B all meet in the hallway outside of the arena and talk for a while. Braden asks, "Do you guys think they'll let us be on the team?" Mitchell replies, "I don't see how they can't. We're all better than their best guys. And honestly, Johnson is the best guy they have right now." Bobby B adds, "Their best shot put guys can throw around 55 feet. I can beat them both." Braden then mentions, "We were really lucky to have Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday as our coaches. I don't know if I'd be here right now if it wasn't for them. Everyone agrees that Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunde prepared them well for higher-level competition. Dr. Braun walks over to Kathy, telling her, "May I see you for a moment?" Kathy and Dr. Braun walk over to a corner of the arena, where Dr. Braun asks her, "Where did Braden suddenly come from?" Kathy replies, "We found out that he just graduated from the police academy, and he got back in town Monday night." Dr. Braun asks, "So, he's qualified to be a policeman?" Kathy replies, "I guess so." Dr. Braun is happy to hear that, since the university offers a degree in criminal justice. Dr. Braun then asks, "Is there anyone else with this level of talent that you know of?" Kathy, who is always full of energy after she runs, replies, "Not immediately. But Hoffer, at Northside, is graduating this year. He can run the 100 in the mid to upper 9-second range, and the 440 in the lower 50-second range. And Erika, she's also at Northside, and can run the 440 in about 55 seconds. So can Tessa, but she wants a swimming scholarship. Good luck getting her. Oh, and Erika is really good at the shot put too. And there's a guy, Mikhail Sokolov, who runs for Liberty. He's a sprinter and is the number one seed in the state, but Eddie's brother, John, is going to beat him sometime this year. Oh yeah. I almost forgot. And there's Akin Mola. He's the number one seeded miler in the state, and he's a senior this year. Last year, he always finished right behind Mitchell." Dr. Braun asks, "How do you know all this?" Kathy tells him, "I was the Northside team statistician." "Well, I guess I still am the team statistician." Kathy, now having Dr. Braun's full attention, asks, "How does Northside manage to produce such exceptional talent?" Kathy explains, "Well, the middle school coach, Mr. Harris, sends up some really good athletes up to the high school. Mr. Harris uses the same training protocols as Mr. Fraser. They work together and talk about training a lot. Mr. Harris like never loses a meet. All of the other middle schools are always afraid of his team. And when they get into high school, Mr. Fraser takes them and develops their talent with Mr. Zunde." Dr. Braun, knowing Mr. Zunde from the past, asks, "What exactly does Dr. Zunde do?" Kathy replies, "He mostly keeps Mr. Crum out of the way. But he works with the field athletes, along with Miss Amherst. And Mr. Zunde works with the football players and the wrestlers in the weight room." Dr. Braun asks, "Who is Miss Amherst?" Kathy replies, "She's the physics teacher, but she also teaches math. Actually, it's Dr. Amherst. She has a PhD in mathematics. I think she's some sort of genius or something. She takes the field athletes out to the field with Mr. Zunde, and they throw the shot put and the other field implements. Miss Amherst takes pictures and records the distance at different release angles. Then, she goes through a lot of calculus and differential equations and finds out the individual optimal release angles. That's how Eddie and Bobby B broke the state records last year." Dr. Braun tells Kathy, "It sounds like they have a real high-tech organization going on there." Kathy replies, "Oh yeah. They do." A bit puzzled, Dr. Braun asks Kathy, "What field record did Eddie break?" Kathy replies, "The discus. He threw a little over 222 feet. Dr. Braun asks, "With the 1.6 kilogram discus?" Kathy replies, "No, with the mother load. The 2 kilogram. Dr. Braun mentions, "Eddie never mentioned anything about the discus." Kathy puts her hand over her mouth and replies, "Oops." Dr. Braun asks, "What?" Kathy informs him, "Neither did I. When I was a senior, I threw the discus around 150 feet. Learning a lot, Dr. Braun asks Kathy, "Let me just throw this out. Is there anything else I should know?" Kathy giggles and replies, "Yeah. Eddie says Leggett needs new running shoes. He can explain why better than me. Oh, and you should get Eddie to make a few of his training sleds for the team. He made one for John, Tessa, and Erika. They said it helped them a lot. Dr. Braun asks, what is this training sled? Kathy replies, it's a resistance sled, and it's probably in his trunk right now. He uses it to train. Dr. Braun replies, whatever it is, I'd like to see it sometime. With practice now over, Dr. Braun then tells Kathy, well, I've certainly learned quite a lot in the last 2 hours. I am very encouraged. Thank you very much. After practice, Eddie has to head to work. Mark and Bobby B. head over to work on Mark's house. Mitchell and Braden head home, wondering what the meeting tomorrow after practice will bring. Kathy, Paula, Barbara, and Johnson head to class. And Dr. Braun has a lot of talking to do with administrators, trying to convince them to come up with a lot more money for the very expensive red carpet he plans to install for Braden, Mitchell, and Bobby B. Later that night, Kathy comes home after working with the high school team. When she walks through the door, Eddie already has dinner waiting for her. They sit down to eat, and it doesn't take Eddie long to mention, so, that was really kind of interesting how Braden just happened to show up today. Kathy replies, yeah, that really was. I'm glad he's back. Eddie comments, yeah, me too. It seems like he was all ready to run. Kathy agrees, telling Eddie, yeah, he was. And he ran pretty good too, don't you think? He ran a whole lot better than Leggett did. Eddie mentions, I wonder how he knew exactly when to show up. Kathy replies, I kind of called him. Repeating what Kathy said, Eddie laughs and says, you kind of called him. Eddie laughs and finally asks, okay, Katerina Karakova, what were you up to today? Kathy asks, what makes you think I was up to something? And by the way, it's Katerina Boganskaya now. Eddie replies, maybe it has something to do with you working really hard to get Bobby B. and Mitchell to try out for the team. I'd have to wonder why you would leave Braden out. Kathy explains, well, he came back. We couldn't leave Braden out, can we? And besides, I did it for you. Eddie asks, you did it for me? How is that? Kathy replies, well, if Braden wasn't around, you'll be handing off to Lug Nut and McCrutchen. You saw how well that went. And if you're handing off to McCrutchen, you'd better learn how to lose a race. Oh, and besides, someone is going to have to shove the baton up McCrutchen's ass, and Braden is really good at that. That McCrutchen guy sucks big time. Paula really doesn't like him. Eddie agrees, telling Kathy, well, you do have a point. But Mark can probably shove the baton up McCrutchen's ass just as well as Braden can. Kathy tells Eddie, by the way, Dr. Braun is going to want to see your training sled tomorrow. Eddie tells Kathy, the next thing you're going to tell me is that he wants me to build one for the team. Kathy replies, he might. Eddie comments, hmm. The price just went way up. Kathy explains, if you build a few, that would be a whole lot of class credit. Eddie begins to think, and tells Kathy, oh, so that's how all this works. They'll grade my welding job, as if they would even know what they are looking at. Then, I get an A in Training Sled Engineering 101. Kathy replies, yeah. See there? That's exactly how it works. Eddie thinks a little more, and tells Kathy, you know, I'll have to make a special training sled just for McCrutchen. It will have a pivoting device on the bottom, constantly changing the resistance. It would be really good at causing muscle strains. Kathy replies, you're so bad. And besides, he doesn't need any help. His performance got a lot worse the day that Mark showed up. Eddie replies, he never had much performance to begin with. Kathy then informs Eddie, you know, McCrutchen could get the gold medal for the most erratic performances over a track career. Eddie agrees and explains, all throughout high school, that guy ran horrible times against our school. But what I can't figure out is, how did his 4x440 relay team always make it to state? I mean, the guy is all over the board. Kathy informs Eddie, his brother is the same way. He runs really erratic times as well. Eddie mentions, well, now that Mark is around, he may not be quite as erratic. He'll just suck all the time. Kathy laughs and replies, you're right about that. Kathy and Eddie clean up after dinner. Kathy then puts on her song, The Power of Love, and they dance to the music. While they are dancing, Kathy whispers to Eddie, now, I can listen to my song whenever I want to. Eddie whispers back, and we can take the long way home whenever we want to. Kathy whispers, we haven't taken the long way home in a while. Eddie replies, that's because we haven't been staying out late a lot. Kathy tells Eddie, that's because we go to bed early a lot now. Kathy's song ends, and Kathy and Eddie go to bed early tonight.